Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. Kim said, hold on to your hats. Hold on to your hats is right. The Dow and Boeing taking off again on Wall Street today. We'll talk to Terry Savage in just a few seconds about that. A little bit later in the program, Frank Sennett will be here from Crane Chicago Business. And one of the things, well, a couple of things I want to talk to Frank about specifically. Bruce Rauner, the governor, is just about to give his State of the State address. You can listen to that at WGNradio.com if you'd like. But we're going to be talking to Tom Morrison, who is a big proponent, state rep of Jeannie Ives running against Rauner. So we'll check in with Tom a little bit later. But with Frank, there's a new poll out among the Democrats, and it's Daniel Bisnow who is pulled into second place behind J.B. Pritzker. The big winner, though, at 38%, is undecided. No one's decided who they want to vote for in the race for governor, at least on the Democratic side in Illinois. All right, Terry Savage on a phone line. Wow, Terry, you know, we've been talking for, what, 3 years, maybe 4 years. If you just told me then to buy Boeing, I'd be a much happier person.
That's all your eggs in one basket? Boeing had some tough years, too. You know, Steve, for most people, you're better off in an index fund. And, yes, in hindsight, we all wrote 2020, but you never know. Putting all your eggs in one basket. Hey, look, you can put all your eggs in the McDonald's basket. That's been another great stock in the Dow. So if you're looking at local companies, and I shouldn't talk about stock because I'm on the board of directors, but CME stock has done well. In fact, they always say, there's no genius like a bull market to make you think you're smart about your investment.
I was going to say, I think it's been a nice run for Caterpillar, too, has it not?
And Caterpillar, there's another great one. Yep.
So, absolutely. Yeah, Chicago and Illinois represented pretty well in the Dow. Okay, so things are looking good on Wall Street today. It looks like they're going to erase, if not all, at least much of the drop over the past couple of days, right?
Yeah, but I ask you, I was about to send out a newsletter to subscribers, if you noticed it, because it came and went so quickly, 500 points seems like a lot historically, but at this level it's not a big percentage, a little over 1%. But if you were tuning in to hear what the stock market was doing yesterday midday, did you have this little kind of queasy feeling in your stomach? And that was a nothing decline. Right. I mean, that was just a little bitty dip. So it ought to make you think twice about looking at what you own right now and where you're going to hide.
It's kind of a theme I want to touch on with you is because, you know, a lot of us now, well, I wouldn't say a lot of us, a lot of people are looking at their 401ks and they're feeling a little fat because there's been a nice run. Fidelity had a study out, I think came out today or yesterday, said the typical saver is now on track to make up 80% of the income they'll need to cover retirements, which is not too bad. It's the highest score since they started keeping track in 2005 when it was 62. So we're better equipped for retirement. Now, they're saying that's in part because workers are putting away more money, but the stock market has quadrupled since early 2009. So that's making a lot of people maybe feel a little flush when it comes to their 401k. And I was reading another article that there's temptation among many to splurge a little bit, to take some money out of that 401k, go on a round-the-world trip or things like that that they've always wanted to do.
This morning consumer confidence came out, popped much higher than had been expected to 125.4. A new report this morning, payrolls, private payrolls added 234,000 new jobs. People have, and wages are up, as a matter of fact, to their greatest gains. This is not political. This is just factual numbers. There are fewer workers around, fewer workers that qualify for the jobs that are out there. Sadly, business says fewer workers that can pass drug tests, et cetera. So the demand for workers is up. Wages are up. Consumer confidence is up. Fortunately, savings is up, or at least the appearance of it, because of the stock market. And what's the Fed going to do? I mean, literally, they're meeting right now. We know that they have said they intend to raise rates 3 times this year. The market's even gotten ahead of them. The short-term, the 10-year Treasury, up from less than 2.5%. Maybe 2 weeks ago, to almost 2.75% today. So we have a strong economy. We have to wait to see whether the Fed gets more aggressive about raising rates. But for right now, people should feel better about their retirement. It doesn't mean, though, that if you're in your 60s and getting close to retirement, that a big market decline, I mean, a bear market's 20%. So yesterday, the day before, the blip was a little over 1%. Multiply that by 20, and what happens to your 401k balance?
Right. It's I don't want to do that. That's math.
Yeah, that's scary math.
I want to.
I don't do math well either. But losing 20% could change your consumer confidence, your optimism, and your spending plans pretty fast. So nobody knows when the top will be. But what's inside your 401k plan where you could hide? And you have to think about that. You're going to need, if you're 65, the odds are you're going to live well over 20 years, according to the actuaries. So you're going to need some growth. That doesn't mean you get out of the stock market. It means you find some places, either because you're retired and there aren't good alternatives for retirees and 401k plans, you roll over to a Fidelity or a Vanguard, or you look at something called a stable value fund inside your plan. But you also know you don't want to jump into the bond fund, because when interest rates rise, bond prices fall.
That's Terry Savage. I'm sorry, Terry. I didn't mean to jump on you there. Terry Savage. We're going to take a break. Terry has a column up today at terrysavage.com, which is interesting because the focus of a lot of these financial institutions when it comes to marketing their products has shifted now, not so much to the baby boomers, but instead to the millennials. So we'll kick that around. Also talk about something new at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau as well. I don't know. Did it make more sense the second time around? This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. 1222 is on a phone line. Is Terry Savage, and she makes everything a little more understandable. So Terry isn't here, and so we usually set up what we're going to talk about by mail, or we chat quickly before you come on the air. One of the things you shared with me was this court ruling today about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and it's a little complicated, but I said, Pashaw, you can make it simple. So go ahead, take 30 seconds, explain
well,
it all to us.
You know, the CFPB was set up to protect consumers. There's just been a lot of debate politically about whether they're so independent and their budget is independent, and what can the president do, and they have the president assigned Mick Mulvaney to be the current director of it, the head of it.
Which was his budget director. Yeah.
Budget director who is in the past said that he didn't even think the CFPB should exist. But the U.S. Court of Appeals today upheld a provision in the Dodd-Frank law, which created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and that says that the director can only be fired by the president for cause. So it makes it a little more independent. Look, there's a war on regulations. I'm glad they're getting rid of some dumb regulations, but why focus on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, because they've done so many really good things for consumers, the banking industry might not agree.
There's an opening this time because the leader appointed by President Obama was resigning, and so he put in Mick Mulvaney. But so this would protect someone who is appointed in future by President Trump or another president, couldn't just be fired at the president's whim.
Exactly.
So it keeps it more independent.
Fire anyone else in his cabinet.
It gives the Bureau a little more independence to not just kowtow to whoever is in the White House. Okay, speaking of kowtowing, financial institutions kowtowing now to millennials, because that's where the action is, although I don't know if there's action with millennials when it comes to investing or not.
Well, so here's the interesting thing, and it's a stab to our hearts because we're boomers. But the boomer, we've been the center of attention about everything, from grade school when they had to build more classrooms to colleges and so forth. And the boomers were really, for the last 20 years, the focus of the financial services industry. They were getting ready for retirement. Did they have enough for retirement? How could we get them to open IRAs and save more money and so forth? But if you think about this now, if you're the CEO of a big financial services firm, what are you looking at? You're saying, gee, the boomers, okay, they've got a pool of money. We want them to roll it out of their 401ks to us so we can put them in good stuff, or else sell them scam stuff. So there's still a big pool of assets, but what's happening to those assets? They're declining. They're getting to be the age where they have to start withdrawing money, so they'll be less. They're more conservative. The boomers are no longer the hot stuff. The millennials are. And the financial services industry has a challenge because to the extent that boomers are running those industries, they have to look and say, wait, millennials are different. We want to get them to save more. We want them to get them to use our financial services. And we need to provide stuff like technology. Millennials are more likely to benchmark and share. They want to know how well they're doing compared to others in their stage. We know they're a lot less loyal to brand. We know they change jobs. So the financial services industry is now gearing up in many, many ways to get this whole market of millennials. If you're a boomer out there, The rollover market is after you. No doubt, someone wants to sell you some very expensive annuity. Be very careful. Your challenge is to get trusted advice to make what you have last as long as you live. But the millennials, they're the growing market.
And so, from what I've read recently, the millennials are doing better when it comes to saving, that they're doing better when it comes to financial awareness. So maybe there's a challenge there, but they might have a more receptive audience than they feared maybe 10 years ago or so.
Oh, absolutely. There was a thought that millennials graduated into their jobs, and the younger ones anyway, in a period when we were in recession, that they watched their parents' life savings drain away in the last stock market crash, that they weren't going to ever buy a home. Now we see home prices are up because of first-time home buyers. The Fidelity press release said, hey, quote, millennials are clearly putting money aside for retirement and taking more control of their personal situations. So that's what I'm saying. There's been a pivot in the financial services industry. Your money is important to you, boomers. You have a couple of big decisions to make as you roll out. How do you find trusted advice? And that's my website has the link to campaignforinvestors.org. You need trusted advice. You need not to be ripped off in the rollover process. And you need to be conservative enough to forecast how to make your money last.
Check out.
Your kids are now the ones getting all the attention.
Well, you can read about that at terrysavage.com. That's the latest column, and get the links for all the other stuff as well. All right, Terry. Listen, you worked hard today. Take the rest of the week off, and we'll talk to you again next week.
I'll be answering viewers' questions on my Ask Terry blog.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, a little later in the program, with any luck, Tom Morrison, a state representative, will join us. He is a champion of Jeannie Ives, the Republican state rep from the western suburbs, who's challenging Governor Rauner. Governor Rauner giving his State of the State address as we speak. And we're hoping that the governor wraps up in time for Tom to join us here in the program. Frank, is there any way you could speed up Governor Rauner's State of the State address?
Maybe with some incentives.
I don't know. I mean, Frank said it on the line. He's the
nice canapes
director of digital strategy at Cranes. Let's develop a digital strategy just to speed things up a little bit. I've got this guest I've got to talk to.
Yeah, I think maybe something like you may have won the sweepstakes.
I don't know if that would work. Might get some of the lawmakers out, but I think the governor's set that way. He's not going to worry about that. So I was going to talk Fulton Market first, but since I started sort of with politics, there was a survey out today when it comes to the Democrats. Greg Hines wrote about it in Cranes. Now, it's a We Ask America poll, which is connected with a manufacturing group. They tend to be a little conservative. Oh, it's with the Illinois Manufacturing Association. Okay. And rather than me give the numbers, you tell me, what did you make of the results of this survey of voters when it comes to the Democratic primary for governor?
Well, right now, the big winner is Bruce Rauner, I think, because he's been really beating up on Pritzker in the advertising, and it seems to be paying off in some lower than expected, possibly, poll numbers. In this poll, the leading option in the governor's race for the Democrats right now is undecided,
yeah,
at 38%. So, and Pritzker now is still leading the candidates with under 30% of the vote. And Biss has just jumped into second place. He's really made a run. And Chris Kennedy has really been lagging behind. He's probably, the least happy about these results. And I would guess Biss and Rauner are the happiest.
You know, I think I like your analysis, because in the end, it does come down to campaign spending in many ways. Pritzker has been on the air more than Flo selling insurance, and he still can only get to 30%. And maybe the answer to that is because Rauner's also been on the air ripping on Pritzker, holding him back.
Yeah, so Rauner has just been hammering Pritzker. He's trying to pick his opponent, which is always great if you can do it in politics. So he would like the guy with the least name recognition and the least amount of money, and that would be Biss. And he has now gone into second place. He's a progressive candidate with probably a third place name recognition behind J.B. Pritzker and Chris Kennedy. So if that continues to be the case, Rauner is going to be pretty happy with his strategy. But this is a year of a lot of electoral unrest. So maybe, a relatively fresh-faced candidate coming out of the Democratic primary potentially wouldn't necessarily be bad for the Democrats. they still probably have, you know, a good shot at beating the governor, who's very unpopular.
You and I have been around for enough of these campaigns and enough of the polls to know, though, that it's fun to see a horse race and to see someone coming up on the outside like this is. Pritzker, even though the plurality are undecided, Pritzker is still trailing. Are still leading Biss by 13 points. I mean, he's got 30%.
Yeah.
Biss has 17. That's a big lead.
Yeah, and it's likely that that's going to continue to be a strong point for Pritzker with all the money and rent name recognition that he has, and he does have a solid base. So, probably the best case scenario for him is he improves on those numbers and comes out with a stronger plurality. But he's still going to be roughed up by Rauner if he does emerge as the candidate.
And it's interesting. He's being roughed up. I think Jeannie Ives is really scoring some punches when it comes to Bruce Rauner. She picked up $500,000 this week. She got a great pub out of her editorial board appearance with the Tribune. Same thing, though. You know, you'd like to talk about a race in it being close. You got to figure Bruce Rauner is way out ahead when it comes to the fight between him and Jeannie Ives.
Well, Greg Hines had a great piece the other day about that, looking at that debate appearance in front of the Trib editorial board and how well she did. And he said, look, Rauner's strategy of just targeting, looking past the primary and targeting Pritzker may work for him, but, he better watch his flank because Ives is coming on strong and he may want to consider putting some firepower against his actual primary opponent.
All right, let's get some sausage. Let's go up to the Fulton Market District, the meatpacking, the vegetables, the flowers. Well, it's not so much anymore, isn't it? It's pretty much all tech and restaurants.
Yeah, it seems like it. The meatpacking days are over. But one thing that has remained consistent is it's been a fairly low-rise neighborhood. A lot of those old facilities have been gutted and renovated, and the facades have been maintained, and new development that has come in has been, a lower-rise profile. So there's a big change now with Related Midwest planning two real high-rises, residential high-rises in the neighborhood, one rising 51 stories and the other 58. So it'll be interesting to see how the neighborhood takes that. Does follow some city design guidelines that have been issued, so they feel like they're on pretty firm footing.
Well, that's right, and the guidelines have been saying that they favor the city. It likes the idea of these taller buildings, skinnier buildings, on a smaller footprint, so there's more green space on the ground rather than the sort of squat buildings that aren't so tall. But I got to figure the neighbors, and the neighbors are going to be pressuring the local alderman to sort of fight this.
Yeah, I mean, the two issues, like you say, on the plus side, you've got the skinnier buildings, they have the big setbacks, and there's more green space and more light, which the city document notes. But on the negative side, there, could be more parking congestion, and they don't fit in with the historic character of the neighborhood at that height. But there is already a 29-story building in the neighborhood, residential building. So it's not like we haven't seen some of this change coming. I mean, it's like three stages. First, right, everybody just comes in and repurposes the old
right.
stuff. Then they do the big gut rehabs and the similar low-rise stuff. And now the high-rises come in. It almost is like clockwork, isn't it?
It's like campaigns. We've seen this movie before. But I like one of them. The 51-story building would have a 570-foot tower, would rise above 10 other existing low-rise buildings, right? So they're going to try to keep the feel of the neighborhood with those older low-rise buildings and then sort of score a skyscraper out into the middle of it.
Yeah, so, I think what they're saying is a couple's not going to mess the vibe up too much, and we'll see.
And this is going to be residential primarily.
Right.
I do wonder, and I know I brought this up to you and it might sound crazy, but I do wonder about the areas of the city redeveloping outside the downtown area and whether there will be a day when the downtown area suffers for that. I mean, it hasn't been so long ago. You and I can remember walking up and down State Street when there were, boombox and wig stores. And
well, I'll tell you what, between your office and my office right now, North Michigan Avenue, if you go up on the west side of the street to your point, from Randolph all the way up to pretty much the old Hard Rock Hotel, there's a ton of empty storefronts right now, and it looks really ratty at the moment.
Yeah, okay, that's exactly what I'm talking about, I guess. We'll see if that has an impact. Okay, one more. So let's do one more campaign story. Lisa Madigan not running for re-election as Attorney General. Of course, the Attorney General has a lot of scuffles with utilities. It's just part of the job, and she has not taken money from utilities. The people who want to replace her have been willing to do just that, right? They're taking a lot of contributions from people like Exelon or Peoples and other utility companies.
Yeah, so the four candidates right now on the Democratic and Republican sides are all taking money from Peoples Gas and Exelon, all the utilities. And as you say, when she got into office, Lisa Madigan stopped taking those contributions because she didn't want any drag on her ability to, you know, fight for people against rate increases, et cetera. But as some folks are pointing out, she did take those contributions when she was first running, just like these guys are now. And they're all saying, it's really interesting in the ecosystem, right? So the utilities are all saying, look, we're not trying to influence anything. We just want the best candidates who are going to have good energy policy.
Right.
The candidates are all saying, nobody can buy my vote. Nothing's going to happen. And the journalist, Steve Daniels, in this case, is playing his role in the ecosystem, putting a marker down, having people on the record saying, you know, we are going to have, you know, kind of calling the fair fight, saying, okay, this money is maybe needed to grease the wheels of the campaigns, get the word out, but the candidates are now on the record as saying it's not going to influence the way we act on behalf of the people. So I see it as a really interesting, like everybody's doing their role in the ecosystem.
It's kind of fun, too. We're going to have some interesting primary races to watch, so that's always entertaining. Frank Sennett, read more at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's a Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, on a phone line now is State Representative Tom Morrison, a Republican from, well, Tom, it's Palatine, right? That's your home base?
Correct. Yeah, Palatine from, and surrounding communities.
Of course, my first introduction to Tom Morrison was as a young intern here at the WGN Radio Newsroom. So it's always, I love talking to interns who've gone on and done good things. So thanks for talking to us today, Representative. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, you just saw the governor wrapped up his State of the State address. You are supporting a Republican who wants to defeat Governor Rauner. What did you make of his speech today?
Well, he tried to be positive. He talked about the history of Illinois, which we all appreciate and enjoy and we're proud of, but he didn't really touch on too many specifics. So it just seems like he's trying to run out the clock on the election. People know who he is. And he tries to paint himself as the only one who can stand up to Mike Madigan. But what? Voters are just not buying it anymore. People want results.
All right. Well, so you are supporting Jeannie Ives, who is running against the governor from the right, right? You're a conservative guy. What is it about her that you think can lead the Republican Party and win statewide in a blue state in a way that Bruce Rauner can't?
Well, first of all, I would say Illinois is much more purple than people realize. I mean, there's no doubt that Cook County is more Democrat controlled, but you look across the state and it's a very, very Republican state.
Yeah,
and
but, also, but Tom, you look at statewide, but look at statewide office holders. There's not a lot of purple there. I know you can Republicans can win in certain areas, but I don't know about statewide.
Well, here's what I think is appealing about Jeannie. I've been in Springfield for 7 years. I've watched Jeannie for 5 years. And I've watched the governor for 3 years. And nobody has the work ethic that she does. Nobody prepares for issues like she does. She sits on committees. She just does her homework well. And I think that came out in her debate with the governor in front of the Tribune editorial board. She knows policy well. And the governor was just sticking to platitudes. And unfortunately, that's not a good way to govern. And I think the people are just hungry for real leadership. That's what she provides. You know, Jeannie is a West Point graduate, an Army officer. She served on the city council, so she knows how local governments run. She studied economics at West Point. So she's been a standout leader in the General Assembly.
Okay.
That's what we need.
But it seems to me like you're going to have to persuade a lot of people. I mean, even the party, right? Tim Snyder, after the State of the State, the party chairman for the Republicans, instantly out with a statement, and the lead sentence is, today Governor Rauner showed why he's the right person to lead Illinois to a better future. So there's the state party apparatus. There's a primary coming up, and they're already on board with Rauner.
He's the party chairman, but and Rauner has given a lot of money to the party. But I'll tell you what, Governor Rauner may have purse strings, but Jeannie has the people. And I'm in the trenches. I'm talking to Republican voters all the time. And they gave Rauner a chance. They wanted him to succeed 3 years ago. And unfortunately, he's betrayed us. And he has not done well. He had his chance. He didn't do it well. And as I talk to people, they want an alternative. And the alternative, a very credible one, as the editorial board found out, as even a liberal columnist like Eric Zorn saw and noted in his column, she is a real contender. She knows the issues well.
You mentioned betrayal. Is this all about abortion and the governor's signing of that abortion bill that allows for government subsidies?
I would say that was the last straw, but there are a lot of other things, too. I mean, I think Governor Rauner betrayed taxpayers when he bailed out the Exelon Corporation. That was a bill that we fought hard against. That was one that the business community was not happy with. And also ratepayers are across the state, even if you're in an apartment. You know, you're going to pay higher electricity bills because the governor gave a bailout to Exelon. And that's just not good policy.
All right, here we are, last day in January, the primary on March 20th. The Jeannie Ives has had a good week or so, that Tribune editorial performance. She picked up $500,000 in a contribution with someone who typically contributes to Governor Rauner. What needs to happen in the next 7 weeks? Because she wouldn't win today, I don't think. But what needs to happen in the next 7 weeks to allow for an Ives victory on March 20th?
Well, we had a press conference this morning here in Springfield. We announced a couple of other lawmakers that came out publicly for her. So Representative Reggie Phillips and Senator Tim Bivens, Representative John Cabello, who is a former police officer, came out. He wanted to talk about the sanctuary state issue. And so it is unprecedented that a sitting governor would have so many people from his own party who would openly stand against him. And then you also look at other Republicans. Our congressional delegation, they're staying silent in this. And that should tell you everything you need to know.
State Representative Tom Morrison. Look, Tommy, we're out of time. I appreciate it, though. Thanks for talking.
Steve.
Hey, best to your family, okay?
Thanks, Steve.